to Unbelievable with Justin Brierley.
Hello and welcome to this week's Classic Replay. We're taking you back to 2013 today. In January 2013, a new church began in London with singing, a sermon and a great sense of community, but it was for godless people. Atheist stand-up comedian Sanderson Jones, who co-founded the Sunday Assembly, talked about its first meeting and why he set it up. And David Robertson, who at the time was a church minister in Scotland, asked questions about whether an atheist church makes sense and what Christians can learn from it. I was also joined by two of those who attended the first service, Rory Fenton and Simon Jenkins. This was a memorable edition of the show. Hope you enjoy hearing it again. Just a reminder as well, if you want more from the show, go to premierunbelievable.com. And our next live event is going to be with apologist Sean McDowell, Tuesday the 15th of November. You can join us from anywhere in the world and it's free to attend. You just need to register at unbelievable.live. I'll be talking to Sean about culture war questions, and you can ask questions as part of that as well. Again, unbelievable.live to be part of that and to register for that event on Tuesday, the 15th of November. For now, hope you enjoy today's Classic Replay. Well, before we talk to Sanderson, who set up this atheist church, let's hear from David himself. David, thank you for coming in today.
It's a privilege to be here, and I apologise if every now and then there's a cough and my voice is somewhat deeper than usual. I'm maturing.
You're a little bunged up.
Yes, a wee bit.
Tell us what you've been up to since you last came on. Your last time was in conversation with another comedian in the form of Marcus Brigstock. Yeah. What have you been up to since then?
Well, the usual. I mean, one of the things for the church is supposed to be dead in Britain. Our church, we've now had to reopen the balcony, which is just wonderful. Going from a church of seven people to over 200, we're now thinking about church planting. So that's been fantastic.
The book festival, of course, was an interesting episode as well, when you had a brief encounter with Richard Dawkins.
Yeah,
at the end of last year.
That was hilarious. I was going out on the plane from Glasgow, and I was late, as usual, standing at the counter, and there's a wee man standing beside me. And it was Richard Dawkins, and I... shook his hand, said, "Professor Dawkins, I'm David Robertson." And he said, I know. And we had to go on the plane together, and we went to Stornoway, and I gave, cut a long story short, I gave my talk. Didn't think that Dawkins was there, and they asked questions. The last question, the chairman said, it was a sellout, it was absolutely packed, and the chairman said, "Professor Dawkins." I nearly choked. I was like, "What?" And he was sitting there, and he asked me a question, his usual one about faith, his complete misunderstanding of Christian faith. I was unable to answer it. I spoke to him afterwards. We had great fun. And again, the interesting thing for that, for me, was not so much meeting him, which was fine. It was they made the BBC Alba, which is a Gaelic program. They made a half-hour documentary, which was very positive on the Christian side and very fair. And but also for me the biggest thing was just a young man came up to me afterwards after the event and said, in effect, "I'm an atheist, and but I want to know more about Christianity." And he asked me questions about the origins of the Bible, genuine questions, not the accusation type. And again, I just thought, isn't it wonderful, Richard Dawkins again being used to introduce people to Jesus Christ. I thank the Lord for that man.
Well, we're going to be hearing more from David as we look at this new phenomenon here in London. The atheist church was a sellout itself, apparently, when it's at its first service back at the beginning of January. Their second service coming up, they're just running it on a monthly basis at the moment. It's called the Sunday Assembly. And it's time to hear from the founder, one of the founders at least, Sanderson Jones. Well, thank you for joining me, Sanderson. Just give us a little bit of background to yourself and what made you come up with this very interesting idea of what's been labelled the atheist church, but you're calling it the Sunday Assembly. What was behind all this?
Well, there's it was funny that David said that he is part of the Church of Scotland, and but part of the idea came from going to Christmas services at Bowden Kirk in the Borders, where my father's from, and going to these services and thinking that there's something wonderful about getting everyone together. Britain is culturally and historically a Christian nation. There's something really powerful, which comes from people coming together. But the one problem for me is that I don't believe. And so, but just because I don't believe, it doesn't mean that you don't want to have access to, you know, transcendental feelings, to, you know, to the idea of that somewhere you can go where you can concentrate on improving life. And I say this as someone who is very, very, very weak. And if you're a very weak person, you need all the help you can get. And that help can come from a community. That help can come from just having a moment to think about what you're doing. Because, you know, we all, you know, come New Year's, I'm sure a lot of people here, we've had that first kick at the start of the year to sort of be like, okay, I'm going to change this time. But you've only got so much willpower. You've only got so much energy. And so to go somewhere where you can just can reconnect with what it's all about.
Right.
I think all of those things could would be a good thing. And so that's, it took a while to sort of get round to it. And then I thought, well, I'll just do it.
Yeah, and I heard you sort of had the idea while on a trip with your friend Pippa Evans, who's also a comedian and is the other sort of co-founder of the Sunday Assembly. So tell us, how did the first service go, the first Sunday of January? It got quite a bit of attention in advance, and I heard that over 200 people showed up on the first Sunday.
Yeah, it was utterly bewildering. I mean, we have, Piffa and I have, you know, put on comedy nights in London, and even doing a free night or a free event, you can, you know, there's so much going on that you can't really guarantee anyone will turn up. 2 days beforehand, I was emailing people frantically, trying to get just have enough people there, because I had coughed up the £200 rental for the hall.
Yes.
And so, but then people just kept on coming. And we, you know, there's some people said 200, another journalist said 250. So it was absolutely rammed. There were people sitting in the aisles, you know, standing at the back. And it was, work out how many people are going to turn up next time.
I can imagine many church ministers being a tinge of jealousy at such a great turnout on their very first Sunday. But obviously you've connected with something that a lot of people, I'm sure many turning up, obviously it's the sense of novelty and what, you know, trying it for the first time and so forth. But do you think then that you have tapped into something quite significant here, that people who don't have any faith or religious sort of feelings want nonetheless the things that often church does offer?
Yeah, I mean, think of all the great things which you as churchgoers get access to by going to church. I mean, one of the reactions from a vicar up in Sherwood, in the Midlands, she actually used it as a reminder for people to, when they come to church, to remember that God was the reason they were going, because she saw that people wanted to go for all the other reasons by looking at us. And so, yeah, there's a real desire for community, for you know, having something which can maybe give a sense of structure and meaning and sort of a sense of purpose.
Absolutely. And I think that is, right. Well, there's so much there that I think David wants to chat to you about, and I'd love to open up a bit as well in the time we've got. You were saying at the outset of the program, David, that your church over the years you've been there has grown to over 200 now, regularly attending from a very small handful at the outset. A twinge of jealousy from you that Sanderson in one Sunday managed to get over 200. What's your feeling on all of this?
Well, yes, Anderson. I mean, I'm just thinking, I spent 20 years getting to that. You know, if I'd just announced we're going to have an atheist service, you know, I could have saved myself so much pain. But you know, yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, I have a couple of questions for you, if it's okay. Well, one comment is, you call it an assembly. There are some of the listeners to Premier who will come from a Christian group called the Brethren, who have assemblies, and they'll just be amazed that there's a new assembly in, you know, in London. But it's interesting. I'm a historian as well, and this is not the first time this has happened, actually. In the 19th century, in Scotland and in London, London City Mission have done some research on this. There were socialist Sunday schools and socialist churches. In fact, most of Britain's cities, which were basically Robert Owenite things. And I find it interesting that basically how things have changed. You know, this is not a socialist Sunday school alternative, but almost a comedian, is that correct? Basically, the two of you are comedians and...
Yeah, but it's not a comedy show is the important thing. I mean, it's funny and fun, just as, and we imagine there will be other assemblies, and as I'm sure you know, just the way that different vicars have different styles, there will be different assemblies to do suit people's different moods. My mood is one of overwhelming enthusiasm.
Great. So you're basically the character. I'm just getting all the things. You're the sort of charismatic version of atheism here. You know, you may not have speaking in tongues, but you know, you will have something along those lines. I mean,
but Pippa has been to Pippa is an ex churchgoer, and she has spoken in tongues in her time.
Really? Well, the other thing that intrigues me is, you know, a more serious question, I guess, is what unifies you? What's the common purpose that brings you together?
What unifies us?
Yeah.
Well, the thing we say is that we're there to live better, help often, and wonder more. And so the way, I mean, and for me, this is one of the, because for many people, when they hear the atheism, they think it's sort of, you know, I've spoken to people, they go, oh, it sounds cold, it sounds, you know, it sounds far too intellectual. I said this for the first time, my relationship with no God is very different. And it's very, in fact, if you think about that, you're here for a very, very brief time. And when it ends, you're going to be pitched into the most inky blackness of no senses, no love, no feeling, none of the higher things which humans are capable of. Mm-hmm. And so if you start to think of it in those terms, well, in fact, every single moment becomes suffused with wonder, and the smallest thing can be almost transcendental. But the one problem is it's very hard to connect to that. I think a lot of people don't even look at it in those terms. But what also is the problem is that all these worries and strains and stresses which accumulate in life mean that it's very hard to connect with those things. And so part of our thing is just, you know, trying to help people live better until they're doing their best, help often until they're doing their bit. Because once those two things are in order, then, you know, you're doing all you can. And that is, you know, all you can do in the short time you're here.
Yeah, I mean, I love that idea. My problem with it is that, well, first of all, I love it in comparison to what I'm usually told by atheists, is that atheism is just simply a lack of belief in God, and that's it. Probably atheist church is probably a misnomer, really. You're trying to have, well, I guess I would call it humanist church, without God, you know, trying to have community without God, really.
Yeah, the way, I mean, we use on our website, we call ourselves the Sunday Assembly, we call ourselves the Godless Congregation. We say we're part atheist church, part foot stomping show, but obviously to headline writers the world over.
Yeah.
Atheist church is what's going to get whacked in it, and it's a stick which we get beaten over the head with by atheists.
I mean, presumably you don't have to be an atheist to go.
Because
you're not exactly going to check people's credentials at the door. But do you have to be an atheist to stand up the front and talk? I mean, is it a requirement?
Well, I mean, so far we're lining. I don't know, this is one of those things. We're hopefully getting Richard Holloway to talk, ex-bishop, ex-Church of Scotland bishop.
Many would say he is an atheist.
He's
an atheist. But then, you know, trying to find people who are able to connect and understand. I mean, no, it's not necessarily that they have to be atheists. At some stage, they probably won't be. But for the time being, it is slightly about signalling our intent.
Sure.
And so you just want to reassure. I mean, I think you're speaking to Rory Fenton. There are a lot of scientific rationalist atheists, and I use those words in inverted commas, by the way.
And I think
who you have to reassure that it's not going to go. You know, we're not going to bring out a crystal.
Well, the thing is that obviously what you did on Sunday morning is different from what you do on a Saturday evening in a comedy club, isn't it? Because from what I can tell and the reports I've read, you wanted to introduce an element of some kind of holistic sort of feeling of thinking about your life and reflecting and looking ahead to the year ahead and what do you want to do with your life and the kinds of things that you don't ask the audience in a comedy club to do usually. But in a way, I can imagine that was the bit of the service that was hardest because you're not then doing a stand-up routine. You're doing something which is actually quite personal, asking people to shut their eyes, be quiet, something quite prayerful in many ways. So how did that go down? Did you think that was, did that work? Were people uncomfortable with that?
Well, it was a really interesting thing. It was something that I wanted to go on for longer. That was my, I would have loved to just have people sit there and just really think about, you know, what they wanted to do for the year and to try to, you know, just let people into a space where it was just them and their thoughts. And so I started it, and I mean, you know, by just sort of like, when I asked people to shut their eyes, I sensed that there was a bit of a moment of, oh, what's happening? Is this a prayer?
well, silence and is then, normally so, the death knell of any comedy sketch. So it must have been for you a slightly, you know.
Yeah, well, it wasn't even so much that. My worry was not from a stand-up point of view, but more from a how British people react to anything they might think is vaguely hippie-ish or self-helpy. Mm. So it was, but then once I sort of spoke to people about what, you know, think about what you want to do, picture that, you know, think about how you'll feel when that happens and just try to just be with that feeling. And
you do strike me as being on the more spiritual end, if I can call it that, of the atheist spectrum then, Sanderson. Some atheists might run a mile at that kind of thing, wouldn't they?
Oh, no, but then it's not, the difference is that the reason that I'm coming from that is from evidence-based reasons. There, if you read the Richard Kahneman book, Thinking Fast and Slow, there are the positive sides of visualization and there are also the negative sides. So, by the way, it's all of these things. I think that what major world religions have discovered is they've actually harnessed, they're using a lot of powerful mental tools which can be evidence-based and then checked. And so we're totally up for finding as many of those as possible. And but the one, I don't remember what I wanted to talk about earlier, that we would very much, you know, one of the things, ways this conversation started when I was speaking to Pippa about it on that car journey, and it turned out we both were thinking of doing something similar, was that we were so bored of, you know, as you guys are, of the teenage atheists, the people who are still, you know, who don't want to go to their room, who want to go and, you know, just say religion doesn't exist.
The angry atheists. Okay. You don't want atheists to be so angry the whole time.
It's not so much that, you know, I don't think that, you know, in our comedy circuit, we come across, you know, no one believes in God. So whenever you hear someone who thinks they're making a real stand against it, well, you know what? You're not being rebellious at all.
Funny because you said this exact same thing, I think, when we spoke to Marcus Brigstock on the last time you were with me, Dave.
Yeah, that did happen. I mean, I find what you're doing and what you're saying really, really fascinating, and a lot of it really resonates with me. I mean, you do realise, of course, that there are many churches which are, in effect, atheist churches. You know, that there are plenty of people who go for community, and there are people like Richard Holloway who don't really believe in God at all. Or if they do, it's an extremely vague thing. So
yeah.
I think you're being, you know, someone once said if you took God out of the churches, 90% of what we do would carry on as if nothing had happened. And all that you're doing is reflecting that in a, I think, in one sense, in a quite honest way. However, I mean, maybe I'll make this suggestion to you. You know, once you settle into your new faith and you become a bit more confident and you want to be more ecumenical, then if you ever want a Scottish Presbyterian Calvinist to come down and share with you, you know, I'm very happy to come into the Lion's Den, you know, so...
Well, no, it's not, but it's, by the way, it's not the Lion's Den at all.
Yeah,
nothing
I know,
can be further from the truth. It's
Wait till you hear me speak, it might be.
I mean, you were wanting to make a point about what do you gather around? What's your point of unity? And obviously then Sanderson said, well, it's this kind of idea of think, often wonder more, etc. what for you is the defining essence of a Christian church and what it gathers around, as opposed to an atheist church?
Well, I think Sanderson's viewpoint is one of incredible faith, in that you get human beings together, and the thing that binds us together is that we're human. In my view, that just, you know, historically and actually doesn't work. What you'll do is you'll gather people who share a similar ethos, similar preconceptions, and so on. The wonderful thing for me about the Christian church is that we have a community that's based on Christ, and therefore we have an extraordinary variety of people. I personally am against those churches which aim at one group, you know, black church, middle-class church, or whatever.
Youngsters' church.
Youngsters' church, all that kind of stuff. And in my own church, what I find fascinating is we've got people from a working-class background, middle-class background, got a lot of young people, we've got older people, we've got people from many different nationalities. The only thing that we all have in common, well, there are two things. One is that we're human, I hope, and the other is that we are focused around Jesus Christ. And I guess my thing would be, I don't really think it's possible to have the kind of community that Sanderson is looking for without God. In other words, I think what you're doing, Sanderson, is you're wanting the fruits without the roots. And I don't think that can happen.
Well, I guess you're early on, Sanderson, and so this is kind of
going to
be an
way,
experiment, isn't it?
It's, I mean, that one thing, we were expecting to be able to do this and sort of work it out bit by bit and all the rest of it and just experiment and find out what worked and what didn't. But then suddenly there's loads and loads of people who are interested to find out. But, I mean, one thing which I would, going back to the point which David just made, is that we're really conscious of the fact that we want it to be as accessible for everyone. Who's that great... The great preacher who rode around Britain. It's not
Wesley. You're thinking
Wesley. Yeah, Wesley. Said, yeah. And so he said that, you know, whenever he preached, he wanted to make it as vulgar as possible, so it could be understood by as many people as possible, and vulgar in the sense of understandable, not as in the sense of crude. And so in my own stand-up, I've got, you know, it's full of Venn diagrams and, you know, other things which are sort of quite nerdy, stuff which I self-consciously strip out when I'm doing this because you want it to have that appeal. And so one thing we really try to do with it is we don't, in order to make it as open, you know, as open as possible, is to say that we're not going to say, you know, how people should live their lives, merely that we want them to help them live them better. So whatever it is you're trying to do, hopefully it will be something that can be improved upon that. And I'm not saying, also, I'm not saying that that churches necessarily tell people to do that either. Yeah. But we are consciously trying to make it have a broad appeal.
Well, we're just coming to the end of our time with you, Sanderson. We're going to hear from a few people who have went to the church service. But the next one coming up, the second one, a lot of pressure, I imagine, for you. You know, so you're sort of... a bit like bringing out your second album or something after the success of the first. But it's coming up Sunday the 3rd of February.
On Sunday the 3rd of February in Islington. The theme is wonder. And so we have got an awesome speaker from the Science Museum. He's their communicator in chief about particle physics. So he's going to talk about the sort of science which... once it's explained to you, just makes your head go pop.
And then we're
going to have a reading from Alice in Wonderland. I think we're going to sing Queen's Don't Stop Me Now. And then we're going to have a few thoughts on how we can find more wonder every day.
Can I just, Sanderson, just say, you know, if you're going to go for the vulgar, you know, and we're talking about comedy, then I don't know, another Scotsman, Frankie Boyle, you might have him down as a
a controversial choice.
but you know, I mean, to me, what you're doing is fascinating, and I mean, I would love to talk about it a whole lot more. I'm intrigued. I'm waiting to hear about the first reformed atheist church breakaway group, you know, and then the breakaway from that, and then the. But I mean, I'm also intrigued by just so many of the things you said. Not least, say, you know, we don't tell people what to do, we want to live life better, but then we come to questions of what's better, you know, how would we understand that, and so on. So, I repeat my offer. I mean, when you're ready and when you're strong enough, I'm very happy to come down and give a different perspective on wonder, beauty, and everything else.
We're going to have to leave it there. Thank you very much, Sanderson, for joining us in this section of the show.
A pleasure.
And all the very best for the next meeting of the Sunday Assembly.
All right, lovely speaking to you guys.
Yeah,
bye-bye.
Sanderson, bye.
Well, that was Sanderson Jones, one of the founders of the Sunday Assembly, and we're going to be hearing from a couple of people who went along to its first meeting in just a moment's time, Rory Fenton and Simon Jenkins. Do join us on the other side of a short break here on Unbelievable. Today we've been talking about the Atheist Church, which is the sort of label that's been given to the Sunday Assembly, the brainchild of Pippa Evans and Sanderson Jones, and we heard from Sanderson himself, a stand-up comedian, about what made him want to put this together and the success of that first Sunday, with some 250-odd people turning up for the first Sunday of the Atheist Church, the second one coming soon at the start of February. Well, thought it was appropriate, as well as having David Robertson here in the studio joining me, to talk to a couple of people who actually went to that first service. So first of all, we're going to speak to Rory Fenton. Rory, I understand you are involved with the British Humanist Association yourself. You're an atheist, but you're not speaking, obviously, in any capacity on behalf of them. You went along just to find out what it was all about. So tell me a little bit about what you thought of it. How did you hear about it, first of all?
Well, I heard about it very lucky just the night before. And it was just quite a big argument on Twitter about whether or not this even made sense in the Atheist Church. I think Sanderson Jones, the founder, seemed to be bombarded by both religious people. He thought that it was, you know, a crazy idea, and he was just proving that the atheists were really just religious. And we also had the kind of new atheist, Richard Dawkins-style non-believers who were saying how ridiculous it was, and that they were just going to be forcing views on everyone, and they turned out to be just like the worst of religions that they'd rejected. So it was through that, and I thought, well, this sounds interesting, which created a controversy. So, yeah, I went and just very skeptically went, because obviously there, much of the reason why people are drawn to non-religious philosophies like humanism or atheist philosophies is that the freedom to believe as you wish, and the idea of a church does sound instinctively to be the opposite of that. So
it is a bit oxymoronic, isn't it? An atheist church. You wouldn't normally put those two phrases together. But you went with a somewhat of a skeptical mind. And when you went, what were your first impressions as people started to gather?
Well, I think that the biggest shock for me, I anticipated seeing maybe 10 to 15 people, but there was 200, 250 people completely packed out this church, which is certainly a rare thing for a religious congregation in England. So that was really surprising to see the number of people who were really, really curious to find out more about this. And one of the nicest things was just how diverse the group was. You know, often I find at atheist meetings you've got kind of middle-aged or elderly white men. We had a nice few mix. We had lots of young people, even people who brought their babies with them. So it was really, really welcoming, I think, and really surprising the number of people there. And very much modelled on a kind of evangelical Christian.
Well, this is the thing. It has essentially a sermon, songs, a band leading those songs. In many ways, you know, some critics of certain evangelical types of services suggest that there's too much entertainment going on, you know, and that the sermon slot has turned into something of a comedy slot. You know, you've got to have all the good jokes to make sure that you get a good reception. Of course, Sanderson himself is a comedian. And so, I mean, did it feel different to being at a comedy club? Was it a kind of different sort of feeling to sort of just being at a show, if you like?
I think that's a good point. It did, for me, I did think it did feel very comedy-esque. And even Sanderson often referred to the thing not as a service or assembly, but he called it a gig a couple of times.
Sort of subconscious, thing going
exactly.
on.
Exactly. So I think that was, and that's, I think for the first one, that's understandable. They're just kind of testing the water. They don't want to seem too kind of preachy. But certainly I would like to see that maybe changing a little bit to kind of get more meatier topics. You know, let's actually discuss morality. Let's discuss death, let's discuss relationships, something a bit more than having a good time, although having a good time is, of course, an important part of being a human.
Sure. I mean, those are the kinds of issues, morality, death, relationships, that a Christian church service sermon might well tackle. And you're saying you'd like to see similar sort of attention given in an atheist context. I mean, but this raises the whole question that you started out with and that Twitter debate was going on about, which is, well, atheism doesn't claim to be anything other than usually people just say, well, it's just a lack of belief in God. So what does atheism therefore have some kind of thing to say about relationships, death, the meaning of life and so forth?
That's a good point. And it is very important that it doesn't turn into, if you're an atheist, this is what you believe. Mm. There's going to be no catechism of atheism. I think you're right that ultimately the word atheist means nothing other than non-believer. I think perhaps a better term for this would be humanist, in a sense. So people who are looking to look beyond the non-belief and say, well, how are we going to live good, moral, loving, enjoyable, fulfilling lives outside of the context of religion? And I think the church can, or the assembly can bring a lot to that, as long as it's always from a humble perspective of, well, this is what philosopher so-and-so said about how to approach death. That's one idea. Here's another idea. But you're right, it's very, very important that in the spirit of free thinking, in the spirit of rationalism, that we're not saying, look, this is what you must be doing, otherwise you're going to...
So you're very wary then of anything tipping over into any kind of dogmatic sort of meeting of any kind. And I'm sure from what Sanderson was saying, they're also aware that they'll be running into all kinds of different opinions as to how it should be structured. Let's go to Simon Jenkins, and we'll come back to you in a moment, Rory. Fascinating stuff there from Rory, an atheist who attended. Now, I'm assuming most of those who did go were atheists or non-believers of one kind or another, agnostics at the least. But Simon Jenkins, who is a Christian and is involved with the Ship of Fools website, went along and just to see what it was all about. Simon, what did you make of the atheist church?
Well, I really enjoyed it. I got to say, as a Christian, I really enjoyed it. It was really delightful to see so many people turning up. In fact, it was really difficult to get into church. You know, it was an old abandoned church, and there were 250 people trying to squeeze through quite a small church door, which probably that church hadn't seen for, you know, perhaps a century. You know, that kind of thing happening.
Yeah.
So that was interesting and challenging. Obviously, as a Christian, that was a challenging sight for me to see. But I did enjoy it. It was a terrific show. And in fact, Samson did correct himself. He did use the word show at one point. And then he said, oh, no, service. I've got to get used to this new vocabulary, you know. And I really liked that. It felt like they were going out on a high wire and they were taking some risks and they were doing something that was very different for them. And I really appreciated that. And the amount, and anyone who's involved in a church knows how much energy and commitment you have to put into running these things. And so I take my hat off to them for what they put into it.
Something Ship of Fools has had as a feature, long-running feature, is the mystery worshipper, people who turn up to a church and sort of give an anonymous account of it based on scores for welcoming and how did the sermon go and music and that sort of thing. How would the Atheist Church have scored on that front, do you think?
I think... Yeah, that's actually really difficult because I need to break it down. In terms of the music was really good. They had a very good band led by Pepper Evans, who's got a terrific singing voice, actually. Really enjoyed that. And people in the front rows, certainly, what Rory was just saying about young people being there, there were quite a lot of young people near me in the front, and they were dancing up and down, and it felt quite Pentecostal, actually. plus the way that Sanderson led the service. I mean, he was a very energetic comedian, and I've not heard him before, actually.
In a different life, he might be at the front of a mega church in America or something, whipping up the crowds. Yes.
Easily. Very, very good. I mean, he was great, and he brought people with him. But the most interesting moment for me was, because there was a lot of jokes and a lot of off-the-cuff, you know, remarks which were really genuinely laugh-out-loud funny. But the most interesting moment was when he kind of guided us into a little period of meditation about the year ahead. And that was the theme of the service, was, you know, the year ahead, New Year's resolutions, what do you want to be this year? And he said, let's just do some, you know, you might want to close your eyes. Let's just think about the year ahead. You know, how would it feel if you were a different person in the coming year? And then he left the microphone open for 15 seconds of silence, you know, for silence. And I thought, he's not going to be able to sustain this because he's a stand-up. No stand-up can stand, you know, silence in a club.
Yes.
And sure enough, after about 15 seconds, he said, well, I don't know how long you want to think about that for. But in fact, people were really ready, I think, to do to have a bit of quiet. You know? So that was interesting. And I think that was a risk-taking moment for them. And hopefully we'll see more of that in the future.
OK, so this was had all the traditional elements, well, or non-traditional elements in a way, of a church service, maybe even an evangelical charismatic church service in some ways, but without God. Did it make a big difference? I mean, would you have been able to tell from, you know, what is the difference fundamentally between what was going on that Sunday morning and what might have been going on at a church down the road for you, Simon?
I did miss God. It was interesting to take the religion out of the church service and see what was left. And what was left was a lot of very good feeling, and it made me realise that a lot of church is about singing, about the simple things of being together with other people, looking into each other's eyes, chatting to people afterwards, having a cup of tea, doing some singing, doing some thinking, listening to people who are talented at the front. A lot of church is about that. And you can take the religion out of that, if you like, or take the faith aspect out of that, and you are still left with things which are valuable and important, you know, on a human level.
Well, I think that's the whole sort of, purpose of the service, isn't it? As Simon was saying earlier, why should Christians, you know, have the monopoly on having a great gathering on a Sunday morning? But, David, you do have a problem with this idea of taking God out. You suggested earlier on... are you having the fruits without the, as it were, the work that's gone into that in a way?
Yeah,
fruits without the roots, that was the phrase you used. Expand on that. What's your problem then with people going and basically having a good time together on a Sunday morning without mentioning God?
Well, I mean, there isn't a problem with that, though I'd go to the pub rather than anywhere else. But I mean, maybe I'll come back to Rory's and the thing, but Simon's thing, you know, Simon, I really appreciated your article on Ship of Fools, and there's a lot of things I think, you know, that should cause us in the church to reflect. But I think there was just a couple of things that struck me. One was you were talking about they were a bit afraid of being quiet. I suspect in a lot of churches people are afraid of being quiet as well. And the thing that you said about you miss God in church, maybe that's what's wrong with the church in Britain, is that a lot of the times God isn't really present. Maybe it's why the church has declined, because we've just reduced church to the community or the singing or whatever. And there's just an enormous sense that people have that God is not real, that they're going through all of this. It's a bit like at the beginning of the 20th century, a lot of churches in Britain that were built, end of 19th, beginning of the 20th, were built with sports halls, dance things and so on, and churches provided badminton clubs, numerous social organisations. By the middle of the 20th century, government, councils, and others were providing that so much better. When the raison d'etre of the church had been, we provide you with all these facilities, youth groups, and so on, then councils provided the better. People thought, well, what's the point of church then? And I have a feeling that you know, the atheist church, if you like, is an extreme, and it's not really an atheist church. It's basically, for me, a group of people just getting together, which is a great thing. I don't have any problem with that whatsoever, and reflecting on things, that's even better. I really, really like that. But I just think that there's a huge, huge problem in the church overall, where in effect that's all that we're already doing. We're leaving God out of the equation, and that's a disaster.
Yeah, I mean, I think the biggest challenge here is not, and in fact, when I talked to, I saw Sanderson and Pippa the week after the service and had a chance to have a chat with them, and they said most of the stick they'd been getting was not from Christians, who seemed to be really curious about what they were doing and interested, but it was from fellow atheists, you know, or people who were more atheistical than them or whatever, and that, you know, that was you know, what the crit they were getting was from within their own community, which I think is probably right. I think that's what
I mean. It does take me back, your comments though, David, to I interviewed at the end of last year Jane Williams, the wife of Rowan Williams, and I sort of said, what what do we need to do, you know, to stem decline in the church and so forth? And she said, well, whatever way you look at it, you know, all the social things going on, the community and so forth, what the church really has to offer is God.
Yeah.
And that has to be the centre of what we're offering. And I suppose for you, it's just a sign that there has, you know, people are interested in turning up and having community and so forth, that, well, that can't be all there is to it then, because you can just open an atheist church in that sense.
Yeah.
That's your...
My ultimate would be that I think all the things that Sanderson was saying earlier are good things that you'd want human beings to have. My argument would be, ultimately, we don't have them without Christ, partly because of the fallenness of human nature, partly because we need redemption and so on. I mean, I think the atheist faith, as expressed by Sanderson and others, is extraordinary. I mean, it takes a huge amount of faith to believe it. And, you know, we'll see what happens a few things.
Well, I know that Rory will be itching to say something about
that.
Well, you love to use these provocative phrases, David.
Well, let Rory... Can I ask Rory something then, just to back that up?
Go on then.
Rory, I mean, I loved what you had to say. I loved the idea of new atheists complaining about forcing views on people. I thought that was deliciously ironic. I loved the idea of babies being brought and thinking what an atheist baptism would be like. I loved what you were saying about, you know, atheist humanist principles. And I guess what for me comes in there is the whole spirit of free thinking and atheist humanist principles. The two thoughts came to mind. One, what are they and how do you get them? And the other is, in the kind of free thinking marketplace, is there room at all for biblical Christianity?
So big questions. I guess in terms of humanist values and so on, they come from, I guess, different areas. Science, we can understand why human beings hold certain things to be moral through evolution, and then I guess through reason as well. But of course, these aren't quite as firm as saying, look, this book says so, therefore do. And so humanists, atheists tend to be a lot more liberal in their outlook, that, you know, we understand that we cannot have a monopoly on any particular moral truth. In terms of biblical Christianity, it can have no special place, I don't think. But I mean, speaking personally, I was brought up Catholic, and I would see a great amount of beauty in the Sermon on the Mount. You know, I think that's fantastic. I think you'll find many humanists talk very, very warmly of do unto others as you would have done unto you. So I think that definitely does have its place, although of course it cannot have a special place. But I think it's a very ignorant thing to say that because the Bible invokes God and God doesn't exist, that therefore we should ignore the Bible, when it's motivated some of the most incredible people, and terrible people of course, but the most incredible people of the past 2 millennia. You know, I want to know why this book motivated Martin Luther King to do what he did, even though I don't believe that it was ultimately divine in origin. So it's, as an object of historical importance, and there may be values in there that matter, then personally I would say that, yeah, it could have relevance to humanists.
Yeah.
But in no significant way.
The interesting thing for me, what you just said there, and we're probably heading away into about 10 other different unbelievable programs, but your thing about science being the basis for working out some of our values, you mentioned two things. Science is completely value-free. I mean, it can tell you, science doesn't tell you things, you work out from science empirical evidence that you can split the atom. Science doesn't tell you whether you should create a nuclear bomb or whether you should use it to generate electricity. So science is no use for working out values, and reason, I would argue, well, some people would say some things are reasonable, others are not. For me, reason, I agree with you, but I think that's because we are made logikos, we are made reasonable in the image of God. For me, what's fascinating in all of this as well is, I think it was Peter Hitchens, who I wouldn't necessarily always quote with approval, who once said the best place to be an atheist was in a Christian country, rather than an atheist country, because a Christian country would still have Christian values, where atheism would be tolerated, and so on. And I think, you know, there is a problem here, because much as I would like to think it would be the case, I'd be really interested the first day I receive an invitation from the atheist church to preach, I'm there. I'm there before I go to the Vatican or the biggest church in America or whatever. I'm there. And the first time I get an invitation to speak at the British Humanist Conference, I'm there. I'll come there before.
That,
unbelievable.
That cuts both ways, David, because yeah. It's not like you're going to invite Richard Dawkins to preach from your pulpit, is it?
It absolutely is. Okay. Richard Dawkins has an open invitation to come and speak in St. Peter's anytime. I'm serious. I would, you know, and Sanderson, who was on earlier, I would have him come up and speak at us. Now, I wouldn't have him at a service of worship because I don't regard that as a public open meeting.
Okay.
In that, but I would absolutely have our Solas Day conference. I would warmly invite Richard Dawkins to come and speak.
Coming back to you, Rory. I mean, we probably don't have time to go into in too much depth the whole issue of where did the values come from and science and so forth. But you said on your blog, you wrote a very interesting reflection on your time that you were worried to some extent, particularly when Sanderson was encouraging people to sort of affirm out loud, life is good, life is great, because Sanderson was saying that he thinks there is some empirical evidence that some types of expression are, you know, do help people to, you know, visualize and make things happen and so forth. That's when the service obviously starts to tip over into more kind of a self-help type of way of doing things. And you've got some reservations on that front, have you?
Yes, I think definitely. And like you're saying, we were encouraged to kind of repeat this mantra of life is good, life is great, you know, to shout it out. And that was fun. And I think, you know, I'd say Sanders is a fantastic presenter. But yeah, I mean, it's something that would, I would say, would distinguish many atheists from many Christians, of course, I don't mean to generalize, would be, without wanting to sound very depressing, the loss of hope, that ultimately rubbish things can happen and we just have to roll with it. Mm. I don't believe that there is a God out there who will do his or her best to make things work out okay. And I just feel that when we were being encouraged to say life is good, life is great, we were kind of hiding from a lot of truths about life, that it's not necessarily all that great, it's not all that good. And it's kind of like, you know, when you see people in the aftermath of some terrible natural disaster talking about, well, look, you know, this particular crucifix survived, you kind of think, well, the rest of the village didn't. And the idea that, you know, God is still good in spite of that horrible thing seems to me naive. And I thought that we were delving into that ourselves when it came to saying
right.
life is good.
Being slightly naive about the realities of life by sort of getting people...
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and not that we you know, enjoy the good stuff. I mean, the good stuff is fantastic. And one of those good things is hopefully going to be the Sunday Assembly. You know, it's really good fun.
Mm.
But I think it's a mature and sensible thing to say, but sometimes it's going to be rubbish and we have to accept that it's rubbish and do our best to kind of get through those times.
Yeah. Be interested in what you think of the more experiential element of the service rather than just the talk and the corporate singing, David. Rory says it's got to be realistic as an atheist. If there is no God, then things aren't necessarily going to work out for the best in the end. There is no ultimate sort of standards to which people will be called and so forth. I often, personally, I don't often see atheists tending to focus on that side of the reality. I think Rory's being extremely honest there in facing up
yeah.
to that. Because when the bus slogan goes, there's probably no God, so now stop worrying about it and enjoy your life, there's a sense that, well, life will be enjoyed if we can get beyond the God thing to some extent.
Yeah, that's probably Rory's Catholic background, you know, all the guilt and angst and everything. I mean, you know, no, I mean, I think you're trying to make realistic, again, going back to what Sanderson said earlier in the programme about when you die, it's just blankness. You know, that's it. There's no love, none of the things you appreciate in this life. So he's doing two things, and I think they're both faith positions, actually. One is saying, when you die, that's the end, there's nothing. And all this stuff that's just now, it's finished. And the other is saying all the stuff that is just now is wonderful. And I think the Christian position is much more balanced. I think the Christian position actually tends to what Rory is saying, that actually life can be pretty rotten a lot of the times. It can be really tough, really hard. In the midst of all that ugliness, there is beauty. So Christianity has this twin track of beauty and ugliness being together. And then, but we do say that there is hope both for this life and for the life to come. So that this life is really only a beginning. I think that what Sanderson has to do is to say, go out and enjoy it. Now, I think when you're able to come together on a Sunday morning and you're there with your babies and you can go and have your cappuccinos and you're, you know, you've got your music, you've all these things that are really, really good. That works fine. How do you deal? Well, I'd be really interested to see how they deal with, like I have to deal with, you know, a caught death, people dying of, you know, cancer, people who are being abused, people who are living in abject poverty. People don't see a lot of things to be really all that cheerful about. And I think the atheist answer has to be that's the way it is. You know, you're going to end in a black hole, and right now it feels like you're in a black hole anyway. So I think Christianity is much more realistic than the faith of humanism.
I'm going to let you respond to that, Rory. Go ahead.
Sure. I think that if your particular Christianity is saying that, you know, you've got to roll with the punches and it's not always going to be great, then that's a positive thing. I'm not trying to draw a huge dividing line. I don't think the human position is a faith position. I think that saying that when we die, that's it. We've got no evidence to suggest otherwise, and all the evidence suggests that the conscious need a working brain with a heart beating blood around it and so on. And then when that ends, you end. That's not unreasonable. But I think that accepting things as they are, you can say, okay, life is just finite, or that we are just atoms. I would agree with that, but I wouldn't agree with the word just. Because if this is how it is, then why not enjoy it, you know? So I do see what you're saying, but I think that ultimately it's not a bad thing to say that we're going to die.
We're going to have to take a quick break, and we'll get a final thought from you, Rory, and indeed from Simon, who's still with us. Simon Jenkins from Ship of Fools went to the service and wrote up his own review of it. You're listening to Unbelievable. We've been talking about the new atheist church in London. It's about to have its second service, just meeting once a month at the moment. It's actually called the Sunday Assembly, the brainchild of comedians Pippa Evans and Sanderson Jones. Sanderson joined us earlier on in the programme. So we'll be getting final thoughts from my guest here in the studio, David Robertson, as well as Rory Fenton and Simon Jenkins in a moment's time here on the show that gets you thinking Unbelievable with me, Justin Brierley.
You're listening to Unbelievable on Premier Christian Radio.
Well, just finishing up our discussion on the Sunday Assembly, the new church, it was something of a hit when it had its first service. It's a service in a disused church in Islington at the beginning of January. Some 250 people turned out. Perhaps it was novelty value, that kind of thing. Who knows what the future may hold for the church. But it was very interesting to see the way it was modelled in many ways on a kind of typical Christian church service. And it raises all those questions we've been talking about in the programme today with my guest David Robertson, Sanderson Jones, Rory Fenton and Simon Jenkins about what's left when you strip God out of a church service. Just going back to you, Simon, as a Christian going forward, you said you enjoyed it. You think it has a lot to show Christians about the way they do church and why we do church and where is God in that mix. Is it something you'd go back for? Do you see it having a long shelf life?
I would go back. I'm not sure I'll go back next month, but I would like to go back. Partly out of the curiosity, of course, because I think the interesting challenge they'll face is when people come along and say they see a different vision for how the church should be. And then that means you have to start nailing things down a bit more and saying, no, we're about this, not about that. So I'd be interested to see how they negotiate those really difficult things. But also, because I think Christians need to find new ways of connecting. I think a lot of our old models are dead. And I think going along and not sort of not playing it safe, you know, by inviting people into our space, but by going into their space and receiving from them and learning from them, I think that's the way. I do think that is a model for the way forward. We have to imaginatively reconnect with people. 40 million people in this country in the census said that they had no religion, you know, didn't want to fill in the religion box. And we have to find a new way forward in terms of connecting with those people, but also learning from them. You know, it's a kind of relationship.
Well, it's very interesting, isn't it? It's a sort of symbiotic relationship almost in this sense that Sanderson has obviously modelled what he's doing on a church model can we then go to their church model and ask questions of our model?
Yeah.
What did you make of, though, those particularly interactive elements? You mentioned, of course, that Si Anderson gave a pause for people to reflect, and there was a sense you had that people actually could have done that for a bit longer, some of the people you were around. What about this, you know, mantra, life is good, life is great? How did you take that on?
Well, I've never actually loved that. I mean, you know, from a very young Christian, which is a while ago now, I never really liked Pentecostal religion because it hectors you. It makes you say things that you don't necessarily feel like saying at the time, or maybe you don't even quite believe in. So I'm never really a fan of getting people to do that. I was much happier when Sanderson was saying, go, you know, do your own stuff now, you know, think about it, you know, how are you going to spend the next year, you know, have that time with yourself now, that kind of thing, or your all time with God, as a Christian would say.
It could be said, though, that even in, you know, a traditional Church of England service, you have a liturgy, you have a creed that people say, even if they might not feel like saying it sometimes, they might not maybe even believe everything they're saying at a given moment in time. In that sense, does a church, be it atheist or Christian, need a creed of some kind, a kind of something to people to affirm in that way that obviously Sanderson was trying to make people affirm something about the way they felt?
I think they have an unwritten creed of some sort. Maybe not, they wouldn't call it a creed, but they must have something they gather around. Mm. And I think that will emerge over time. I mean, in terms of liturgies, which I've loved, you know, most of my life I've enjoyed liturgies. But my son said to me recently, you know, when we all stand up in church and we all say the same things together, it can feel a little bit like you've suddenly gone into a cult, you know, and you're all droning, glassy-eyed, these statements. And that gave me a completely different take on how liturgy could come across to someone else. Mm. So I think, you know, there are interesting things to talk about in all that.
Rory, final thoughts from you. Well, you're planning on going back to the Sunday Assembly, are you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's a really great idea, and Sanderson and Pippin are really great ambassadors for this kind of friendly atheism. I did like that, although it's been called the Atheist Church, they never once, I don't think, mentioned atheism. You know, they're not at all pushy. I think that religion provides a lot of good in its services in terms of community. And something I do, the thing I liked most about going to Mass as a Catholic was shaking hands with everyone around me during the sign of peace. And I really do miss that, shaking hands with strangers. I want to suggest that for the next Atheist Church, that we all shake hands or hug or whatever it is we're going to do, high five. I think that's something that's really missing within a kind of secular society is that feeling of community. And I don't feel that what's missing is God, but it's just that need to get together, to have shared values, to discuss things that really matter to us.
And I really hope
that that's how this can become.
They say we're more connected than ever in an internet age, but in a way we're also more isolated than ever because many of our interactions now tend to be in a rather impersonal online form. And just getting people together physically, you think, is a good idea generally?
Absolutely, I really do. And in fairness, I think most people heard about it electronically through Facebook and Twitter. It does have its purpose. But you're just right, and that's a really important question moving on for an increasingly secular country. How are we going to make sure that we maintain that feeling of community, that religion, has to be said, was successful? And obviously, I'm from Northern Ireland. There was a lot of debate created by religion as well. But we do need to really look at a community. And I think what Simon says, I really do welcome this need for dialogue as well between the non-religious and the religious to kind of discuss these issues about how we're creating community in a kind of new Britain.
Very kind of you to join me today, Rory. Thank you very much. Final thoughts, David Robertson. You're not against this, obviously, as far as you're concerned. If people want to get together and, be inspired, that's great, but it's not church. What's the difference then? Because we've said community is great, people getting together is great. I'm sure some people do come to your church because they see community, friendship, values, and that's the way in. But that's not all there is, you're saying.
They would end up not staying. I mean, because you move beyond that. I mean, I think, you know, just reflecting on all of this, what strikes me is that this is the atheist copying the church. This is us not going to them and learning from them. This is them copying us. That interesting that Pippa had a charismatic background, and they got the idea from attending a Church of Scotland in the Scottish Borders, and, you know, numerous other things. So basically, they're mimicking the church. So, which is kind of, you know, they say that imitation is the, you know, the biggest form of flattery. Well, maybe that's, maybe there's some good in there. But for me, the most fascinating thing in all of it is, I think that there's stuff we can learn about the church in this. That I think we've turned church into a kind of comedy club, social club.
An event.
An entertainment venue. It's a gig. You know, and sometimes I hear Christians talking about that. Let's do this gig. And I think we've left God out. That's the big problem. And then we have, it's little wonder that we're in such decline. We end up with a kind of what's been called moralistic therapeutic deism. That, you know, we teach people this is how to live a better life. This is how to make yourself feel good and so on. And maybe what we need is to bring God back into the house. Otherwise, we may as well. In some sense, you could argue the atheist church is just being more honest. For me, we need that sense of the otherness and the holiness of God and the awesomeness of God. And I guess if I was going to put a mantra on this, I would argue that ultimately the atheist church will fail because you will not have community without Christ. Not in its deepest and most profound sense. I would also say this, you cannot have Christ without community. So where you've got churches that are saying we're teaching Jesus Christ and we're teaching the Bible, and there's no community, then non-Christians, I don't think they are teaching Christ, because non-Christians are not going to come in and say, well, I'll see how these Christians love one another. You know, I wish I had something of this. I remember one man coming to our church and telling me, David, I hate everything you teach. It's against everything I believe. And I said to him, well, why do you let your children come? You can't stop your wife. She'd become a Christian. And he said, well, because you've got everything that I want. And I said, he said, if you could just leave Jesus out of it, it would be great. And I said to him, do you know, it's because of Jesus that we can have it. And I think that's, in this whole program, that's where that most fundamental difference is. I think the more of Christ and of God that we have, that's what a church is. It's gathered to worship and serve Jesus Christ. The church is the people who follow Jesus Christ. I think we'll find that atheists like Sanderson and others, many, many of them will become believers because they will see what they're looking for.
You heard it here first.
Yeah, absolutely.
David Robertson, thank you very much. Just a moment to say thank you again, though, to our other guests who joined me on the programme today. They were Rory Fenton, Simon Jenkins, and, of course, Sanderson Jones as well. Details about the Sunday Assembly with the podcast of this programme, and indeed links to David's church and where you can find the details of my other guests today. That's all available from the website premier.org.uk/Unbelievable. Thank you very much for joining me this week, David. Hope we'll see you again before long.
It's been great being with you, and great being back down in freezing London.
Yes, compared to the Caribbean sunshine of Dundee.
Yeah. Absolutely.
There you go, the Atheist Church. Wonder what you make of the whole concept. Do get in touch and let us know. You can email me, unbelievable@premier.org.uk. You can also find links to our newsletter, YouTube channel, ways to give, an archive of past shows, and of course, many more resources and other podcasts for exploring faith at our website, premierunbelievable.com. And don't forget to register if you'd like to be with us for Sean McDowell on Culture War Questions. Tuesday the 15th of November, we're going to be taking your questions in a live show. You can be part of it. Just register at unbelievable.live. For now, thanks for being with us, and we'll bring you another Classic Replay same time next Tuesday.